From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the state of New Hampshire, which ranks first in the nation for pre-K programs. That's according to U.S. News and World Report, which ranked the 10 best states for pre-K based on several factors. One of them is the percentage of students under the age of 5 in pre-K programs. Other factors included test scores, graduation, college preparedness. And there's a growing body of data connecting test scores and graduation rates and more to pre-K programs. New York, by the way, did not rank in U.S. News and World Report's top 10. But that could change. More districts are finding ways to meet the needs of families asking for pre-K services, and other organizations are also stepping in to fill the gaps. This hour, a conversation about pre-K. Who wants it? And who benefits most from it? Our guests include a couple of people who have been working in one area in particular of our community to help families that have wanted to fill this need. Greg Benoit is the director of the Gates Public Library. Greg, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
And also here is Ryan Boring, director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center. Ryan, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, listeners, as we talk this hour, we're going to be focusing in some ways on one specific community, but I think the broader story here is about who can get pre-K services for their kids, how that is changing in New York State and districts across the state, because we've heard a lot of emphasis on this, especially coming from Albany. And we'd love to hear from you as we go throughout the hour about the experience that you've had and whether you see the benefits. So, Greg, why don't you kind of give us an outline for what Gates Public Library and Westside Family Y has been doing here in your community?
Yeah, so my story starts probably about 4 years ago. We had received a grant from State Senator Robach to convert a storage room into an early learning center, which is an educational room that is built with the precepts of a movement called Every Child Ready to Read. And when we built the room, we had some input from the school district, and at that point in time, I found out that the school district operated a pre-K out of a private daycare facility.
And again, so, this is about 4 years ago.
This is about 4 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
And so I thought if there can be a pre-K classroom in a daycare facility, there probably can be one in a library. So that was kind of my end goal. In the interceding 4 years, we've had two needs in the community that have emerged. My understanding is this particular year, Gates Chi-Lai School District, they operate their pre-K on a lottery-based system, and they were able to accommodate all the children who wanted to get in, which is great and should be celebrated. But many years, as many as 60 children, sometimes more, sometimes less, are turned away. Oftentimes, these are children who come from families that don't have the economic means for private pre-K accommodations. So I thought that the library is an educational institution chartered by the state of New York. And in that 4 years, starting in 2011, we have our own educational programs. We had 7,400 people come to an educational program. Now that's story times for children, cooking classes for adults, book discussion groups for seniors. Last year, we had 33,000 people come to an educational program. All of this takes place in about an 800-square-foot room. So we need our space for our own education programs. But it's my understanding that the Gates community lacks the space for pre-K programs in a broader sense. We tried to work with the school district to have a pre-K operated out of the space. Ultimately, it didn't come to fruition. There was a disagreement about the nature of the insurance that the school district would have to carry between the school district and the property management company. But that's where the Y came in. The Y is the largest daycare provider in Monroe County. They provide preschool education to hundreds, if not thousands, of children. They're experts in the field, so they stepped right in. And they're a natural fit. We're going to operate two partial day preschools in a 2,000 square foot room that'll be, it'll have a moving wall that it can be used as one large 2,000 square foot room or two 1,000 square foot rooms. And that will help alleviate the problems with the lack of access to pre-K. The Y is a non-for-profit. They have financial aid available for the children and the families who don't have the means to pay in full. Then when the Y is not using it, we're going to be using it for our own expanded lineup of programs.
Ages 3 and 4 or age 4 for pre-K?
Ages 2 to 5.
2 to 5?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So different options, different age groups, depending on what the families need.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit more, Ryan, about the Y's involvement here. Greg, I think, set up the story pretty mm-hmm. well here in a community that, you know, Gates, and we're going to hear from their superintendent later this hour, just about the work they've done to try to get up to speed in terms of space. And I think it feels to me, at least as an observer, that in the last 5 years, there's been a lot more emphasis on pre-K in this state. Do you agree?
I agree. They're really starting to focus on that and the need for it. Before Greg came to us at the Westside Y to have this partnership, our center at the Westside Y was at max capacity. We have a full-day daycare there, and we also have a partial-day preschool program, and there was no room for our partial-day preschool program to grow. So for him coming over and giving us this new space, we have two large classrooms instead of one that we had been working out of, which was able for us to add a two-year-old program to it, which was a need. I had many phone calls asking for that, and so we were able to add that into it, as well as have more class times for 3 and 4-year-olds as well.
Okay, and I think from what I have been able to observe, as school districts have tried to add pre-K programs, it generally starts around age 4, and you're looking at mm-hmm. 2 to 5 here.
Exactly.
Tell me how you see the importance of offering services as young as 2, but certainly at 3 and not just 4 years old, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. It's very important. You know, they need to, when just a 2-year-old program is a 2-hour, 2-day-a-week program, but it adds that it helps them, you know, socially, and it adds that social aspect into it and helps them prepare them for the other classrooms. So they're not just getting thrown into that. They ease right into the 3 and 4-year-old classrooms.
And so what's the feedback from families been? I'd love to hear from both of you on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, my feedback has been great that they've been adding to that classroom. I used to see a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old program and other YMCAs, and they're extremely successful. So adding this into the Westside YMCA, you know, we're really excited about it.
Okay, Greg?
One of the things about incorporating children as young as 2 is it gets them prepared for the classroom environment. I've heard anecdotally stories of students who haven't been in a classroom. They weren't in pre-K. Now all of a sudden they're in kindergarten. They don't know what the expectations are, that they're going to be sitting down at a desk. So preschool gets them ready for that. I do also want to point out that our project, when you hear about expansion, you think about, is there an increase in taxes? How much is this going to cost? This project is made possible by a grant from the Department of Library Development, Division of Library Development from New York State, and is budget neutral. And in fact, it... not only is it budget neutral, but it actually generates revenue for the library because the YMCA helps defray some of the costs associated with the space. So some of the concerns I've heard from community members is how much is, this is nice, this is great, but what's the price tag? And so when I tell them that, it allays a lot of people's concerns.
It's already a busy library. As Greg mentioned, you go back to 7-8 years and more than 7,000 people are attending a library program of some kind mm-hmm. versus today it's how many?
33,000 was what we ended last year with.
33,000. Do you have the space?
No, we don't, and that's why we need this space. So if you're familiar with Gates, which I hope you are, it's in the former Jim and Ralph's restaurant. It's connected to the library via a walkway. It's an absolutely beautiful space. We are having a fundraiser on May 18th from 7:30 to 9:30, where author Tim Wendell, who is a nationally recognized author, will be speaking about his latest book, Cancer Crossings, which is about some of the research that was done at Roswell Cancer Institute to help cure childhood leukemia. Very much in the vein of The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. So if you were a fan of that book, the book's not out yet, but when it comes out, you can most certainly go to your local library and check it out. Or you can go to this service I've heard of called Amazon.com. I'm not too sure about them, though. So we're having him come and speak. We're partnering with Writers and Books. We're going to have a beer tasting prior to the author interview. And Beers of the World will be furnishing the beer and providing samples of beers from around the world.
And when's all that happening?
Friday, May 18th from 7:30 to 9:30.
At
the Gates Public Library.
At the Gates Public Library.
You'll get to see the new space. You'll get to see the work that we've put into it. Like I've said, it's been a 4-year project. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into it, but ultimately I think it's going to benefit everyone in the community, not just the 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds. It's going to benefit teenagers, adults, seniors.
I want to ask both Greg and Ryan. Greg is director of the Gates Public Library. Ryan Boring is director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center, which has partnered with them and to create this this pre-K education program. And we have had a number of listeners over the years, as we talk about pre-K, ask these kind of questions. So let's start with what a pre-K program does look like. And now I'm sort of keenly aware of the difference between students who come into a classroom and sit down at a desk versus something that's a kind of a combination of learning and play and physical activity, because I've got a child in kindergarten, and it's fascinating to see the differences in views on how it should be done in place to place. So I'll start with you, Ryan. What does the program, what does it look like? How long during the day? And give me a sense for what kids are doing.
Yeah, so we, it's each class is about 2.5 hours, except for the 2-year-old program is 2 hours. But it's a 2.5-hour program is the longest, and it's a structured program. So they do get that into it, where it's, you know, they come in, they have large group time, small group time, where they're focusing on certain skills that they need to focus on. They do choice time. We also, embedded in the program, have once a week swim lessons incorporated into the program, which is a huge benefit that we offer, and also have lots of large motor play. We are the YMCA. We also incorporate, you know, healthy eating and physical activity into our programs as well. So they get throughout the week, even if it's a 2-day, 5-day-a-week program, they still benefit so much from it. But each classroom, a 3-year-old program is 3 days a week, 2.5 hours. And then the 4-year-old program, there's a couple options to choose from, either 3-day-a-week or 5-day-a-week. So there's different options to choose from.
Okay. Are most families at 4 years old doing the 3 or the 5?
They do both. It really depends on what the family's need is, you know, and what they feel that their child can handle. You know, some parents feel that they can't handle 5 days a week. It also depends on where they are financially and what they can afford. So if they can't afford the 5-day-a-week option, they can do the 3-day-a-week option, and they still benefit from that program.
And Greg, where exactly is the space that's happening in?
It's at 902 and 904 Elm Grove Road. So if you take 531 and get off at Elm Grove and go left, we're right past Total Sports Experience. There's a little plaza there. There's a Mexican restaurant, an Italian pizza place, other kinds of stores. So we're in a commercial retail type setting. The YMCA is just down the street from us. We've had a relationship with them that goes back years. Our children's librarians make weekly visits to tell stories and read books and do crafts with the kids who are a part of the daycare program there. So this is really just an outgrowth of an existing relationship that we've had with them for, geez, I don't know, it predates me, so a long time.
Is this, in a sense, a way to help preserve the value of libraries into the future? I ask because, you know, it's as kids get older, if they're not exposed to libraries and physical books early on, I wonder if they're sort of adapting to a world without physical books.
You asked the right question. You're going to get a long answer. Yes.
You've thought about this as a director of
library. For those of you at home, I've said this on your show before, I'm a relatively young man. I'm 35 years old. I could be doing this for another 30 years. I don't know what libraries are going to look like in 30 years, but certainly there will be communities that elect to have their library just be a website on a server somewhere, in China. And you log on and you download your book and you stream your movie and that's your library. I don't like that for a couple reasons. For one of them is a selfish reason. I would like to have a job in a library. I love working in libraries. But the other is a practical reason, and that is that education is a social experience. People learn best when they learn with and from other people. And I can tell you, as someone who's taken both online classes and classes in person, it's real easy to blow off an online class, and a class in person you get so much more out of. So this is an attempt to keep libraries relevant as a physical space in the community. It also is meeting the demand for educational programs that we have. And to me, the future of libraries is programming. We have a very large cookbook collection. We noticed that that's one of our highest circulating subsets of our collection. So we started having cooking classes. We take a look at what books go out, and then we try to figure out how can we turn this into a social experience where people can build relationships with their neighbors, learn from other people, connect with people that they may not have ever had the opportunity to connect with before.
Do you think that this set of kids who are coming through are going to get used to and want to see the library as part of their community?
Yes. We go out of our way to plan, we have a very active STEM program at our library that Mary Jo Smith and Hannah Baumgartner, our two children's librarians, have put together. And when I say STEM, that has a lot of connotations. It's the fun aspect of it.
Well, science is always fun, man.
Yeah, and so is math.
Math not. I think there's a distinction there. Go ahead.
But I was being facetious. I'm the math guy. Sorry, math people. It's not so much academic. We try to. This analogy is a little, maybe it'll be lost on some people who don't own dogs, but when you got to give your dog a pill, you wrap it in some cheese. We're the cheese in this analogy, and the education is the pill.
I like that analogy, actually. Jamming it down a dog's throat there. But No. I like that. You make it more palatable. We're talking to Greg Benoit, who's the director of the Gates Public Library. Ryan Boring is here, director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center. We're talking pre-K and the program that they have put together in recent years to help meet the needs. There were families that could not get into a lottery system in Gates. And the good news is that is changing. But this is a program that sprung up to try to fill some of that gap. You can call the program. We'd love to hear from you about your experience with pre-K. Are you seeing it in your community now? Has that changed? Should we start to see it at 3, 4? And what are your expectations? 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Greg and Ryan, do we feel good enough now about the research? At the top of the program, I mentioned U.S. News and World Report. They're ranking pre-K states in their pre-K based not just on number of kids in pre-K, but then they're connecting it to graduation rates, they're connecting it to test scores, college preparedness. Are we feeling pretty good that there should be and there really is naturally a link between kids who are starting with those structured programs earlier? Do you believe, Ryan?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's been proven that early childhood education really does help kids as they go on through school. It gives them a head start.
Okay, Greg?
We're talking about 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds. It really starts at birth. I just had a son. He's 1. I sing him the alphabet. I sing to him every night before he goes to sleep. A parent is a child's first and most important educator. And I mentioned our early learning center room, the seed that grew into this partnership. that room, it's filled with children's toys, but it's as much for the parents as it is for the kids, because it's about getting parents comfortable teaching their kids and instructing their kids, because they are the most consistent, most reliable educator a child's ever going to have.
In some ways, though, that sounds to me like you're saying the education can't just be in structured programs.
No, it can't. I mean, the structured programs are the bare minimum. And if you know in life, if you do the bare minimum, you're gonna have a mediocre life. And that's not what's going to make our communities excel. That's not what's going to make our country succeed. You need to go above and beyond. You need that element where the child chooses what they're learning. The child finds their passion. And that's where the library comes in, because we don't have a lot of structure around our education, because we want the children to choose, am I into dinosaurs or am I into robotics or am I into art or am I into playing sports?
And sure, and before I grab our first phone call, I think what Greg is describing too is a combination approach. You know, obviously it starts with parents at home. I'm thinking about kids who don't have that benefit of parents who are really investing time, or maybe don't have the time to invest in time. Their poverty is very difficult for families. And then I'm thinking of families, not just in Gates, but wherever the case may be, who can't get their kids into pre-K programs. I mean, was that part of the motivation here, that you're looking at this community saying, look, if we've got families that can't get into a pre-K program, somebody has to do this?
Yeah. Down the street from the library, there's some subsidized housing. There's a lot of families living there who depend on food stamps. I'm concerned deeply about the future for those children, because what kind of future do you have when your kid shows up to the first day of kindergarten and they can't recite the alphabet, or they can't count past 10. These are things that teachers have told me, kindergarten teachers have told me, happen on a fairly frequent basis. And that's a deficit that in many cases the children never overcome. They're always a year behind. They're always struggling to keep up. And we want to ameliorate that as much as possible. I mean, I know not every kid is going to be able to get into this program, but we're doing something.
Yeah, and the YMCA, you know, we don't turn anybody away. You know, we provide financial assistance for those who cannot afford our programs, all of our programs.
Let me grab our first phone call. This is Sandra in Rochester. Go ahead, Sandra.
I was at the very beginning of this program, and we had an organization called the Rochester Area Association for Young Children. I was on the board at the time, and we really were sort of a center for people who were beginning nursery schools all over the city. And we set some criteria and helped them get started. I myself was a Montessori teacher, so I went on to start a nursery school with the federal government, which was more like what you're doing. And we started from a settlement house, and we would go out on the street and knock on people's doors and ask them if they had young children and would they like to send them to a nursery school. And along with our nursery schools, we all had a parent or two who would like to work with us. And I was fortunate enough to have a couple parents who went on to further training and became teachers. I myself finally went to BOCES and taught handicapped nursery school. And those children, the ones that I had, were mostly ADD children, and we had a very good program with social workers and physical therapists and speech pathologists, right handy, and we did a lot of outdoor work with the children, and the program was pretty open. In other words, the children were able to choose their own activities, and there was a lot of socialization skills, a lot of small motor skills that were taught, and, of course, a lot of physical activity. So that program was really beautiful. I don't know if it's still going or not, but it was very helpful to parents. We worked closely with parents. There was in Irondequoit, we had a what we call guided observation, where the parent, one parent, was in another room and could watch through a glass and watch their children, see what's going on, and see how their child related to other children. And then we got together with the parents after school and talked about what they had seen, and is there anything more that we should be doing with your children, or not doing, as the case may be.
Well, Sandra, just
that was a very nice educational program.
Yeah,
so that's some of the history of preschool in Rochester and our environs.
You're an amazing woman, Sandra. Literally going door to door, reaching
amazing.
Out to family. That is really, really beautiful stuff. Thank you, by the way, for the phone call, Sandra, and for the history lesson for us. I really appreciate that. And but that's in some ways, as much as that is a beautiful story. I think the world we're trying to create doesn't require somebody going door to door asking families, "Do you know that there's this this opportunity?" Right? I mean, it's great, right? But we got to get past that, right, Ryan?
Right. We really. You know, we've moved on, I think, from going door to door now. There's so many ways now through social media, email, things like that now that we are able to connect with people more widespread.
Yeah, you want everyone to know what's out there. And Greg, before I get our only break of the hour here, let me just ask to follow up with you on something Sandra mentioned, which is the way parents would observe kids and see how they're doing. How do you feel it's appropriate for pre-K programs and for anybody who's kind of working with kids to make sure they're measuring where kids are?
Well, I'll speak to our children's programs that we have at the library because that's really my area of expertise. We encourage the parents to stay in the room with the children, to play with the children, and to engage with their children during our story hours in the children's room when there's not a structured story being read to the child. So, yes, we encourage the parents to be present with their child. From a practical standpoint, but also because then the parents can see for themselves what their children's interests are, how are their children interacting with other children, and where are they coming up short, where are they excelling.
Sandra, thanks again for the phone call. I don't know where communities like ours are without people like you over the years. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and welcome Kimberly Ward, who's the superintendent of the Gates Child Life Central School District, for just sort of a broad view of where we are with pre-K in terms of what is mandated, what is on offer, what is changing in New York State. As I mentioned, in the last 5 years, there's so much more emphasis on funding pre-K programs, but it takes some districts some time to get the space there and everything up to speed. So we'll talk to Kim Ward in just a moment, and we've got Greg Benoit, director of the Gates Public Library, Ryan Boring, director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center, with us here in studio. We're coming right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, bicycling versus driving, the bicycle versus the automobile. Could you give up your car? We're going to talk to two people who essentially bike everywhere. They've mostly given up their cars, even here in Rochester, and yes, even when it snows in April. Two more who would like to or tried, but found problems with our culture, our infrastructure, support for bicyclists. So the bike versus the car, next hour. Welcome back to Connections. We're talking pre-K, and I want to bring in the superintendent of the Gates Child Life Central School District. That's Kimberly Ward, who's on the line with us now. Thanks for taking the time, Superintendent Ward. How are you?
Hi, Evan. Very well. Thanks for letting me join you this afternoon.
I want to start with a kind of a broad question about what is mandated and what districts have to do versus what districts have been trying to do. So why don't you take me to, you know, where we are now vis-a-vis what we've been hearing from Albany over the last, you know, recent years, and what a district like Gates Child or any public school district has to do regarding pre-K versus what you want to do and what you are able to do.
Well, that's a great question. Believe it or not, the public doesn't realize that kindergarten is not mandated by New York State, believe it or not. But certainly there's been a lot of emphasis from the state, certainly from the governor, in terms of making sure there's early childhood programs that include universal pre-kindergarten for both 3 and 4 year olds. We were lucky enough to pursue some grant funds about almost 4 years ago now, and we're one of very few that were awarded that funding. So we have been thrilled because it is something that we feel is so valuable. you know, certainly our focus on all of our early childhood and preschool programs are, you know, learn, our play to learn. And a lot of that has now sort of expanded into our grade kindergarten, first, and even second grade with work that Erin Eugene, our coordinator of early childhood learning, has really been trying to certainly embed into all of our curriculum and certainly our instruction that's happening for our early childhood students.
And we're talking about age four, Superintendent Ward, is that right?
Right. Currently, I know the governor feels very strongly about 3 and 4 year old programs right now. With the funding that we have received, we are offering a 5-hour program for our 4-year-olds in the community. We would love to expand it to 3-year-olds and hoping some additional funding comes from New York State. But other than that, it's not mandated. I know many of my colleagues and other school districts are looking for ways in which we can really give our young children in our communities a head start, because that's really what it does. We're finding many of our students that are in our UPK programs and then entering kindergarten are much more socially adjusted. We talk about that fine motor skill that's so important when they get to kindergarten and beyond, and then certainly looking at math and literacy skills. You know, we send out actually a census card to find out how many children are of preschool age so that we can develop programs that best meet the needs of our community, and certainly offering those programs free to our community members, which is something that before this funding came our way, we were unable to do. So we've just been thrilled about the progress that they're making. And we heard from many that oftentimes our little ones don't even have a book in their hands. And we're so grateful to our partnership with Gates Public Library and certainly the Chi-Lai Public Library, because they are working very hard to make sure every child, no matter how old they are from birth on, has a book in their hands and really begins to, you know, have that love for literacy and learning, and then certainly building on math skills as well.
All right. So what I want to ask you next, Superintendent Ward, is about, you know, sort of the idealism versus reality of funding. Every year, New York State passes a budget. Every year, there is a fight over how much education funding. There's a back and forth. The governor sets a budget. The legislature adds a little more. They kind of negotiate. It ends up somewhere in the middle. School districts make do with what they can. And I know it is a complex picture for you and for the team creating a budget, because everybody should, you know, sort of says, well, do this, do that, add more, improve this facility, add pre-K at 3 years old. But I understand the money is not endless. You can't just snap your fingers and all of a sudden everything is there. If we really wanted to fund universal pre-K all the way down to age three at the public level and make that mandatory, are we talking about an expenditure, an outlay that is just not realistic, or eventually could that become realistic in this state?
Well, with the current funding coming from the state, it's not realistic at all. We actually, because we committed to the grant funds that came our way for universal pre-kindergarten, that's 5 years. That's it. We're hoping, and we still, you know, appeal to the state to say, could you let us know if we're going to, you know, continue to receive funding to at least provide this program for 4-year-olds, not to mention 3-year-olds. You know, we started to build into our budget, which is tough. We're within a property tax cap levy limit. And like you said, there's many unfunded mandates that continue to come our way from the state. And so it is a struggle, but we've started to build it into our annual budget process just so we can sustain it over time, because we do see the value in it. But for many of our school districts, I know Pittsburgh, just read it in the Democrat and Chronicle, you know, they're still struggling with full day kindergarten and finding funding to allow for them for the initial setup and then to sustain that program over time. We need help. And so I would ask the public out there, if you feel strongly about universal pre-kindergarten and early childhood programs, by all means, write letters to your local legislators. I know Senator Robach, Assemblyman Bronson, and certainly Senator Ranzenhofer, who represents Gage-Chi-Lai, have always been very supportive and have advocated for more funds. But we haven't really seen anything, the money where the mouth is, so to speak, from the governor. He feels strongly about 3 and 4 year old universal pre-kindergarten programs, but there hasn't been a lot of detail or information regarding the funding and how that's going to be distributed throughout the state for school districts that want to make sure these programs are available to their families within their communities. So it is a very tough question. I'm hoping and staying optimistic that we continue to see the value in this, and so will they at the state level, and bring some funding.
And Superintendent Ward, before I let you go, I want to ask you and all three of our guests a question that comes from a listener, but I've seen a number of people who I think I would probably put in the skeptics category of pre-K, not because they don't think these programs can be effective, but they think the studies are starting to show that you've got to do it really, really well for gains to last. Let me read from the Washington Post, because one of our listeners shared this story. The Washington Post had a story last year called "Preschool Can Provide a Boost, But the Gains Can Fade Surprisingly Fast." And I'm going to quote from the Washington Post story, and then we'll have our guests respond. The story is not saying that pre-K can't help, but they're saying that a lot of the traditional programs maybe aren't making that lasting impact that we want. So here's from the Washington Post story. Quote, states and the federal government spend more than $15 billion a year on preschool education. With that hefty price tag, we want early childhood programs to work. And to reduce longstanding educational inequalities, we need them to work. So it's encouraging when studies show that these types of interventions can give children a boost by the time they enter kindergarten. Unfortunately, our investments in some early childhood programs may be based on an inflated sense of their promise. Even our best efforts often produce only ephemeral gains. We reviewed data from 67 high-quality interventions, all of which included some degree of pre-literacy and early math skill building, and most of which targeted economically disadvantaged children. And we found that the effects faded startlingly fast, falling by half within a year and by half again 2 years later. For lasting effects, we need to focus on skills that wouldn't be otherwise developed, do more to change a child's environment, and provide ongoing support, especially during sensitive periods of development, such as early adolescence. End quote. Superintendent Ward, let me start with you. So the Washington Post is not saying pre-K doesn't work. They're saying that in some cases, we can't expect it to be a magic wand, and we have to tie a lot to it to make it last. What do you make of that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It depends on the programs. It needs to be research-based. You know, there certainly needs to be a lot of work around professional development for those teachers that are going to be giving that instruction at the UPK program. And I think what we've realized is that it can't be in isolation. In other words, you can't say, here's a universal pre-kindergarten program, and we don't see that sequence or that scaffolding of skills as they enter kindergarten, first and second grade. And I think that's why I'm proud of the work that we're doing in Engage Child Eye, because we are making sure that that play to learn is in place as they move from one grade level to the next. There's so much research, and we're seeing and measuring the value that that provides for our kids. I would just ask that, one, it's really important. I just had this conversation, actually, with my husband. I have a granddaughter. You know, she's soon to be 9 months, and they're living with us. And so I see the value of all that work. And he said, you know what? I never even thought about that, but there's so much parents can be doing to help children. I said, absolutely. So he not being around, you know, children that much, I said, start to help, you know, our granddaughter count her fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, pull out a book. You know, animate that. And so it does start with parents and a partnership with parents, partnership with our community organizations, such as our public libraries. And it does sound silly, but it takes a village to raise a child. And I think that's so important. It cannot operate in isolation. I will say to you, Evan, I just witnessed a kindergarten teacher who used the universal pre-kindergarten model to basically for 5 days play zoo for a half an hour. And she let the kindergartners go. They had a register, fake money. They were building binoculars, and they built fans that were animal shaped, and they organized fencing and, you know, stuffed animals. And then they were writing and illustrating about it. It's amazing what our UPK and kindergarten students are able to do when they're empowered and engaged and encouraged to just play to learn.
One more question for you, Superintendent Ward, and then I'll turn our questions on these subjects back to our guests in studio. It comes from a listener via email named Christy, who says, she says, I think the name UPK is a sham. There's nothing universal about it. Not only are there not enough slots in districts, but the state prohibits districts from targeting students who most need it. The spaces must be allocated by lottery. So we're paying for preschool for kids who would be going anyway, but not sending kids who really need the help. That comes from Christy. Superintendent Ward, can you respond to that?
Well, universal certainly means it's available to everyone. And I think that's one of the reasons why we decided to do a lottery is we don't know those students that are at risk versus not. We do know that because of the demographics of our community, it is a mix of that. And so that lottery does allow for us to have that, you know, heterogeneous grouping of those families that certainly can benefit from it, but also those families that, you know, certainly, you know, have the ability to provide a UPK program outside of the free program that we do in the district. So, but you're absolutely right. The governor and certainly our state needs to do a better job to say we need to make sure universal pre-kindergarten or and even full day kindergarten is available to every child universally throughout the state. Well, That's where our advocacy needs to be.
And will there be any families in your district in the next school year who want pre-K who can't get it?
We don't believe so. From our early census numbers and from our applications, applications are due up till April 10th, which is next week already. We believe we can service every family that is looking for universal pre-kindergarten programs for their child.
Superintendent Kim Ward from the Gates-Chihlai Central School District. It's always great to talk to you, and I know it's a busy week. You know, the kids are off school, but you're not. So thank you for taking the time, Kim, for joining the program again.
Thank you. I always appreciate it, Evan. Thank you so much.
Always good to hear from her. That's Superintendent Kimberly Ward, the superintendent of the Gates-Chihlai Central School District. So let me turn back now to Greg Benoit and Ryan Boring, who are Greg's the director of the Gates Public Library, Ryan, director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center. And what you just heard from Kim is that they think, at least for the next school year, that they can meet the needs, even via lottery, of all the families who want pre-K. That hasn't been the case in recent years as they've transitioned towards trying to emphasize pre-K more. That's one of the reasons that this partnership sprang up. Greg, I suspect it's one of the reasons that you're planning still to be there, even if Gates can provide that need by a lighter.
Yes. I mean, there's going to be families that miss the deadline. There's going to be families who are unaware of the deadline. There's going to be families whom, you know, that traditional model doesn't work for them. One thing I'd like to say, referencing the Washington Post article, I believe, is libraries are at the forefront of combating something that we all call the summer slide, and that is children's educational performance declines over the summer months because they're not in school. And so when they come back in September, they're not where they were when they left off in June. And so that's where we step in. Parents need to take their children to the library, keep their children reading, even if it's leisure reading, even if it's reading graphic novels. Our children's librarians went to every single classroom in elementary school in Gates, and one of the teachers asked, after our librarians left, how many of you want to go to the library and participate in the summer reading program that they have? And everybody raised their hand. And then he asked, how many of you have parents who are going to drive you to the library so that you can participate in the summer reading program? And less than half of the kids raised their hand. So we started a pilot program, which is now a permanent program with the Gates-Chihlai School District. One of the library board members, Nettie Shiano, works for the school district. She helped us secure a grant where children are bused from school to the library so that they can participate in story times, crafts, the types of activities that they would typically get to experience over the summer in a library. And then the parents pick them up from the library so that the parents get a familiarity for the library as well. So I'm going to go back to that. You do the bare minimum, you're going to have a mediocre life. If you want your kid to excel, you're going to have to take them to the library during the summer. They're going to have to read, even if it's a graphic novel, even if it's, you know, I don't know, something that's not held in high esteem, like, I don't know, Captain Underpants or something like that. It still has an impact on their cognitive abilities. So combat the summer slide, take your kid to the library. There are tons of things going on at every library in the county. There's not a library that doesn't ramp it up in the summertime.
And Greg and Ryan, do you agree with the listener who wrote in to say we can't call it universal pre-K until it's truly universal?
And I definitely do.
Yes, definitely. I completely understand what they were saying.
Yeah. And so I thank you for the emails and feedback, listeners. Let me grab one more phone call. This is Andrew in Irondequoit. Next, go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, hi, hi, Greg, and hi, Ryan, and hi, Evan.
Hi there.
Hi.
So where is all this money going to come from for 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds mandated? I don't get it. Because the New York taxpayer is kind of tapped out, in case you guys didn't know that.
Yeah. I think that was part of my line of questioning for the superintendent. I mean, it's easy for people to say, well, do this or do that, but that money has to come from somewhere. And every year, it's a fight just for the status quo as opposed to a greatly expanding the offering. So I think that would probably have to be a big cultural shift in what we allocate towards education funding is my guess. Or
what do you mean by cultural shift?
People would have to accept that more of their tax dollars would be needed if we want to go ahead and fund truly universal pre-K. I mean, all the way down to 3 years old, because that's a lot more money. And I think taxpayers wouldn't want to do that right now, or some taxpayers would not want to do that right now.
Yeah, I mean, people literally are running out of money.
Yeah,
there's no money to pay the bills, the other bills.
I take the point, Andrew. That's exactly the challenge for New York State, and part of the reason that programs like Greg and Ryan's have sprung up here, because they've had to find a way to fund it. Greg, you want to mention again how you funded it?
Ours is funded through a grant, and I'm aware that the grant comes from New York State.
So that's taxpayers.
It's taxpayer money, yeah. So that is what built the building. But the YMCA does a lot of fundraising, and that's why they're an excellent partner. And their fundraising has kind of rubbed off on me because we do a lot of fundraising at the library now. So we're able to provide programs at no cost because we've done the work months, years in advance in raising funds through things like our beer tastings, our book sales. We have a golf tournament that we do with the Chamber of Commerce that benefits the library. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's really good. But can you duplicate that on such a massive scale? I mean, we're talking, you're not even universal, I'm just finding out.
Well,
Probably not. I don't know.
You can. I mean, if you want to try, I think that's great. I applaud what you're doing, but man, you better have a really good program that you can prove that it's good if you're going to come to the taxpayers and say, we want even more money out of your property taxes. I mean, people are really up to their eyeballs with this state and their tax regime. I mean, they really are.
All right, Andrew, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate that. And so I think what I'm hearing from Greg and Ryan is you've made a real effort to understanding that you had that grant from New York State, that state taxpayer money, but you're trying to raise money privately. You're trying to be creative. You're trying to reach out to the community to say, here's what we do. We want you to keep it and grow it. And similar to what WXXI does, you know, most of our money comes in that way as well.
I look to WXXI and the YMCA as models for fundraising for the library. So we're having our beer tasting May 18th that I mentioned. You can buy tickets online. We'll mail them to you at gateslibrary.org. It's $25 a person, $45 for two people. There'll be silent auction prizes, and then you'll also get to hear from a nationally recognized author, Tim Wendell and Kyle Simmel from Writers and Books, who will also be present. He's the MC of the event. I'm very cognizant of the fact that Gates is the poorest inner ring suburb in Monroe County, and every financial decision I make, I take that into consideration because I see the people every day who come in, and I know they're footing the bill for the computers, they're footing the bill for the heat and the electric and the books, and I want to make sure that they're getting their money's worth because we are the poorest inner ring suburbs.
All right, down to our last 70 seconds or so real briefly here. I mentioned to Superintendent Ward, and I'll ask you guys about the Washington Post story that says pre-K gains can be solid, but too often they are lost pretty quickly, and you've got to find supports that will prop those up. What do you make of that, Ryan?
And I agree what she was saying. The learn through play approach is research-based, and that we follow the same exact model with the YMCA preschool programs in our high scope curriculum. And also exactly what Greg was saying, that, you know, with parents involved, they also do better. So those two components together, I feel that we do have a very strong program that they will benefit, and it's a long-lasting benefit. We have a open house on May 23rd from 5 to 7 at the Gates Public Library, so they can meet the teachers and see the space for our preschool program.
And Greg, final thoughts from you on that, maintaining those gains.
Again, the parent is the first and most important educator a child will ever have. I suspect the kids that do well in this Washington Post article have parents who are invested, and the kids who do not do well have parents who have divested themselves of their kids' futures.
I want to thank Superintendent Kim Ward, who called in from the Gates Chihuahua Central School District, Greg Benoit, director of the Gates Public Library. Thank you, Greg. Great having you, as always. Thanks for coming in here. And Ryan Boring, director of the Westside Family YMCA Child Care Center. Thanks to you as well, Ryan.
Thank you.
All right, short break. And on this snowy April day, we're talking bicycles versus cars next.